The 16th and 17th centuries saw Sephardic Jews journeying to the Holy Land, where seminal Jewish codes were written, and it saw examples of incredible Sephardic statesmanship. And in the end, this mystical connection to the Holy Land and the tales of Sephardic statesmen help explain why so many Sephardim embraced the Zionist project. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 141, the Sephardim in the Holy Land. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. If we wish to understand how the arrival of the Sephardim from Spain to the Holy Land impacted Judaism and the Jewish world, we need only focus on the life of one man. Joseph Caro, born in 1488 in Toledo, left with his family 4 years later when the Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492, ultimately ending up in Ottoman territory. He was convinced that a clear and concise summation of Jewish law was needed by the Jewish diaspora. He ultimately arrived in Tzfat, Safed, where other Sephardic rabbis and mystics had gathered, joined by perhaps the most influential mystic of all, Isaac Luria, who was himself from a Sephardic mother and an Ashkenazic father. In Safed of the 16th century, Joseph Caro composed the commentary known as Beit Yosef, covering the entirety of Jewish law that applied in his own age, in a language so crystal clear that it made him the incredibly influential decisor that he would become. Then, also in Safed, he followed up with a composition that was even more important, the code known as Shulchan Aruch, the set table, which became the most important legal work in Jewish history since the Talmud. Meanwhile, the ruler of the Holy Land during this period, Suleiman, would come to know a very different Sephardic Jew, one who was not a rabbi or mystic, but a statesman. Both types of Sephardim would profoundly impact the future of the Holy Land and of Jerusalem, and both of their stories, therefore, need to be remembered today. As we have seen, the reign of Suleiman fundamentally and forever changed the makeup of Jerusalem with the rise of what is today called the Old City Walls. We have also seen how Sephardic Jews first arrived after the expulsion to Jerusalem when the city's community was led by Ovadia of Bartanura. And we have also discussed how the Jews in Jerusalem during Suleiman's reign were granted a small space for prayer by the Western Wall. It was something, but it was a very, very small place. And it reflected the fact that Jerusalem under Suleiman was still not meant, in the view of its rulers, to be first and foremost a Jewish city. But under Suleiman, the Galil, the north of Israel, became a very real center of Judaism. This was linked to the achievements of Rabbi Caro's community, but it was also due to the accomplishments of a Sephardic Jew of a very different sort. Simon Montefiore writes as follows, quote, "In 1553, Suleiman's Jewish doctor introduced him to Joseph Nasi, whose family had been forced into a fake conversion to Christianity before they fled via Holland and Italy to Istanbul. There he won the Sultan's trust and became the confidential agent of his son and heir. Joseph, known to European diplomats as the Great Jew, ran a complex business empire and served as a sultanic envoy and international man of mystery, an arbiter of war and finance, a mediator between East and West. Joseph believed in the return of the Jews to the Promised Land, and Suleiman granted him the lordship of Tiberias in Galilee, where he settled Italian Jews, rebuilt the town, and planted mulberry trees to foster a silk industry, the first Jew to settle Jews in the Holy Land. He would build his Jerusalem in Galilee because that ultra-sensitive connoisseur of power knew that the real Jerusalem was the reserve of Suleiman." End quote. It is amazing. A diaspora Jew, descendant of the Sephardim of Spain, who met with rulers in the courts of kings and who worked to bring Jews to the Holy Land and who actually gained some form of political position within the context of a section of the Holy Land. Don Joseph Nasi is, in other words, a true predecessor to the Zionists of the 19th and 20th centuries. And there is, I think, an important point to be made here, an aspect of the story of the Jewish diaspora, the Jews of the Holy Land, and the Jewish return that is often missed. The success of the Zionist project was one of the miracles of our age, and one of the greatest achievements in Jewish history. Yet its leadership at the beginning was, to a great extent, Ashkenazic and secular, and at least some of these leaders saw Jewish religious observance as a relic of the diaspora. And it is all too often assumed that until modern Zionism, there were no real examples of political greatness in Jewish diaspora history. But a story of the Sephardim and its impact on world Jewry highlights how a study of, among other diaspora stories, that of the Sephardim and their impact on world Jewry reveals that, in both of these cases, the opposite is true. First, the development of Jewish law is very much linked not only to the diaspora, but also to the Holy Land. So much of our faith, of the laws that traditional Jews love, of the rituals in which traditional Jews engaged, are linked to the code of Joseph Caro that was written in the north of Israel. And its influence grew almost immediately after it was composed, because a seminal leader of Ashkenazic Jews who lived many miles away, Moshe Isserles of Krakow, known as Rama, had also conceived of the idea of writing a large work summarizing the views of Jewish medieval scholars on Jewish law. He spent years on this project, but then he came upon Rabbi Joseph Caro's writing, and an incredible exemplification of self-awareness, humility, and praise for others beyond himself, Rabbi Isserles saw in the clarity of the writing of this Sephardic rabbi such facility with succinct language that he decided that he would instead create only a small work known as Darkei Moshe, The Ways of Moses, wherein he would only note his slight disagreements with Rabbi Caro's work, Beit Yosef. Then, when it turned out that Rabbi Caro had followed up his original composition with his code, the Shulchan Aruch, the set table, Rabbi Isserles again chose not to compose a parallel of his own, but rather to add glosses to Rabbi Caro's work, noting only when Ashkenazic tradition differed from the Sephardic sages on whom Rabbi Caro often relied. It was in this amazing act of unity of a rabbi in Poland partnering with a Sephardic rabbi of the Holy Land that this code, the Shulchan Aruch, achieved even greater influence, one volume that joined the approaches of Sephard and Ashkenaz, and therefore became the work of law for so many Jews around the world. It was in the land of Israel, and only later in Poland, that the work was done producing the code of law that to this day impacts the lives of so many Jews. Meanwhile, the mystics of Safed in Rabbi Caro's community developed rituals that also spread throughout Jewish communities everywhere, becoming so central to Jewish practice that one would not be blamed if one believed that they were developed thousands of years ago rather than the 16th century. These Jews of Safed greeted the onset of the Sabbath with a series of psalms, and one of them wrote a liturgical piece, Lecha Dodi, Come My Beloved, which is today sung on Friday evening throughout the Jewish world. They celebrated the annual finishing of the Torah reading with hakafot, circlings in the synagogue, a tradition which also spread throughout the communities of Ashkenaz and Sephard. So much of what we do today and so many of the texts we follow today can be traced to the 16th century and to the communities that were created during Suleiman's reign. Texts and traditions, not of the exile, but of the Holy Land, that were profoundly embraced by the larger Jewish world. So much of Jewish law and practice is a product of the land of Israel. Meanwhile, in contrast to the assumption that may be put forward by some, that until the advent of modern Zionism, there were no examples of Jewish diaspora statesmanship, the fact is that, among other cases, one can find such statesmanship in Sephardic Jewry. Don Joseph Nasi was a man who sought to settle Jews in the Holy Land through his own statesmanship in the diaspora. And that is but one example. A century later, another descendant of Spanish-Portuguese Jews, Menashe ben Israel, would emerge as a statesman in his own age, leaving the place of his pulpit in Amsterdam to travel to England, seeking from Oliver Cromwell the allowing of Jews into that country. The 16th and 17th centuries saw Sephardic Jews journeying to the Holy Land, where seminal Jewish codes were written, and it saw examples of incredible Sephardic statesmanship. And in the end, this mystical connection to the Holy Land and the tales of Sephardic statesmen help explain why so many Sephardim embraced the Zionist project, though not necessarily in the way that the secular Zionist Ashkenazi elite would have expected or preferred. The historian Jane Gerber, to whose history of Sephardic Jewry this presentation is indebted, notes as follows, quote, "There is no question that Sephardic Jews were Zionists. Their special blend of practical messianism and historic sentiment was fervent." And she adds a bit later, "Once given the opportunity to join the emerging Jewish state, almost the entire Sephardic world rose up to participate in the return." End quote. The profound impact of Sephardic Jewry on the Jewish state was something, as some have noted, that some of the Ashkenazic Zionists did not expect, but it was, of course, something understood, appreciated, and embraced by Menachem Begin, an understanding that would fundamentally define his career. The arrival of the Sephardim in the land of Israel was a seminal event in Jewish history and in the story of Jerusalem. For, as we will argue next week, it is with the hindsight of history that we can appreciate how, as the Jewish community in Safed grew, the Sephardim would also build more synagogues in Jerusalem, forever defining the sacred city itself. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Signing off.